Simone Undress, we'll jump right into this conversation about Nina. First, I'll remind you on the way into this conversation, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com is the place to go. And Nina Simone was alive and living in old Baltimore. She's singing. She'd be at MeQ, I'm sure. So, we are joined by Rosalind Cawthon, Education Coordinator for Center Stage, a playwright. She wrote this incredible play, Nina, that performed here in Baltimore. It was just a rave success. We're also joined by Akiba Solomon, editor for Color Lines, who wrote a piece for Color Lines called A Personal Take on the Nina Simone Biopic Casting Troubles. And Akiba and Rosalind, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you, Mark.
Akiba, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good.
I just want to say one correction. I'm not the editor of Color Lines. I'm actually a writer for them. Kai Wright is our editor. So.
That's what I thought, but it was down there on my sheet, and you just read what's on the sheet. Can we lower the music a little bit so we can... It's a little loud. Okay, cool. Much as I love Nina, we're talking about it. We've got to do this. Okay. So... Let's talk a bit about this. And folks, the lines are open at 410-319-8888. We're going to spend the first half hour of our show talking about this. So if you do want to join in on the conversation with your thoughts, I suggest that you do it now. And let's cue up that piece from Nina Simone so we can play that in just a moment with her riff on blackness so we can talk a bit about that. Let's cue that up so it's ready to roll as soon as we're ready to hit the button. But Akiba, let me let you begin. I think that you know, this is something that some people know about, some people don't, about Zoe Saldana and taking on the role of Nina in this movie. But for our listeners who haven't heard about this controversy, please kind of let's lay it out a bit for us, would you?
Sure. I mean, basically, there has been this unauthorized Nina Simone biopic in the works for, I think, about 6 years. And initially, the writer and director is a woman named Cynthia Mort, who is best known for producing sitcoms, including Roseanne and Will and Grace, and she also co-wrote the Jodie Foster revenge film, The Brave One. And it's important just to identify who she is, I think, because part of the tension with this biopic is that people who feel very protective of Nina Simone's legacy are saying that Mort is not the most qualified person for the job. At any rate, this film started off with Mary J. Blige, actually, as the lead, and for reasons that we're not clear on, she dropped out and Zoe Saldana was hired to play Nina Simone, and there's been a lot of uproar, particularly in the black women's blogosphere, about the fact that Zoe Saldana's features are very much unlike Nina Simone's. And then finally, perhaps in response to all of the uproar, we've gotten these leaked photos of Zoe Saldana with brown face and some sort of prosthetic nose and what looks like an Afro wig from a Halloween store, in my opinion. And those things are supposed to take the place of Nina Simone's features. And so that's where I think a lot of the tension is coming from.
Ross.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's really about Nina and about her legacy. I've received backlash about, you know, we shouldn't be downing Zoe Saldana because she's also another woman of color. Why are people sort of bringing back up this light skin, dark skin issue again? But for me, it's not even about that. It's about continuing Nina's legacy in a way that's proper and correct. And they could have, if they wanted to, in my opinion, found someone who was in a similar vein to Nina, who had any similar physical features, could channel that energy that Nina has. So I just want to be clear. For me, it's not about the whole light skin, dark skin thing. I have light skin people in my family, dark skin people in my family. I love all black people, all people of color, all people for that matter. But for me, it's about protecting Nina and doing her justice.
Folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Do we have that piece queued up? Can we jump? This is Nina Simone, who is that was actually sent to me by an old friend, an actor as well, Bob Wisdom, who put this on his site, and I borrowed it from Bob. And this is Nina talking about blackness and why what it means to her. It's a very short scene, but it's important in the context of our conversation to hear Nina's voice.
I think what you're trying to ask is, why am I so insistent upon giving out to them that blackness, that black power, that black pushing them to identify with black culture? I think that's what you're asking. It's I have no choice over it. In the first place, to me, we are the most beautiful creatures in the whole world, black people. I mean, and I mean that in every sense, outside and inside. And to me, we have a culture that is surpassed by no other civilization, but we don't know anything about it. So again, I think I've said this before in the same interview, I think at some time before, my job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them. And I will do it by whatever means necessary.
And Nina Simone was a woman also of that era, of the 60s, of this explosion of black consciousness and this explosion of revolutionary fervor and activity, which she helped define and was defined by.
Right. And I mean, when we did the Nina Simone show out at Creative Alliance, we had a little community discussion about this in the midst of the performances. And Jonathan Gilmore, wonderful singer, musician, said, you know, and I'm going to quote him, you know, Nina is being denied even in death, that during her life she had to struggle with issues of beauty and acceptance. And she also writes about in her autobiography that she was really into fashion, and she always wanted to be in the fashion magazines and be a fashion model, but no one ever called upon her because she didn't fit that sort of American ideal image of beauty. And so when she was first offered her first fashion spread, she was so excited that finally she could embrace her own beauty. So for so many years during her life, she was denied because of the way that she looked. And now, even in her death, it feels as though she is still being denied.
And Akiva, I'm going to open the phones after this, and I'll read something that Nina Simone's daughter, Kelly, said, which I want to read to everybody. But I mean, the importance of this in some sense is just because of who she represents. And here's this movie being made by, and you described the woman who's making this movie, Cynthia Mort, is that right?
Yes.
And that, when, you know, as I was saying to Roz before we went on the air, this is like, you know, when Spike Lee made Malcolm,
mm-hmm.
Denzel's Malcolm became everybody's Malcolm. Do you know what I mean? I mean,
right.
The master's Malcolm became what Denzel did and what Spike put on. Mm-hmm. Whether you agree or disagree, that's what it became, because that's the power of film, the power of Hollywood, the power of what comes to us via cinema and DVD. And that's maybe the problem where people are having some difficulty with this, because given the story, which is based around her kind of love affair with some gay person that she was working with, whether it was true or not, mm-hmm. is another part of the controversy. But this is the image. This is going to be Nina. I think that's a piece, Akiva, that is bothering so many people.
Well, I think also another piece that is so bothersome is the idea that the features of another actress, those features that she was born with, aren't good enough for the silver screen, even to represent Nina Simone. And so people feel very viscerally an erasure. I mean, the fact that you know, and I've read this argument, it's sort of the consumer argument, that Zoe Saldana is more marketable, quote unquote. But Nina Simone wasn't about marketability. Okay,
right.
That wasn't who Nina Simone was. if they wanted to do a biopic about somebody who was marketable, they could have done a biopic, I don't know, about the Supremes or somebody else. But that is not who Nina Simone represented. And the idea of taking, basically taking the political context away from Nina Simone, both aesthetically and also from what it seems to be in the script, it feels like a crime. And it feels like a lie. And I think that that's another aspect of why people are upset.
Let me go to the phones here. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on this, your thoughts on Nina Simone, your thoughts on the movie, the controversy around it. I'm not sure what the world can do about it once Hollywood money's in it. Mm-hmm. But there can be a response from the community. People can be aware of it. It can be part of our discussion. I think it has to be. 410-319-8888. And Reverend Meredith, you're on the air.
Good evening, all. Good evening.
Good evening.
Having seen the Nina Simone tribute at the Creative Alliance, having read the comments of the person who facilitates her official website, mm-hmm. for me, as a person of Afro-Latina descent, this is really not about color or the skin pigmentation of Zoe Saldana. This is about the authenticity of Nina's story. And from what I've read and from her daughter's comments, it doesn't seem authentic. And I think that people are tired of heroes and sheroes and heroines of African descent being co-opted by Hollywood to make money. And I think that, for me, is the root issue. So now we're now there are people who want to turn Nina Simone into some type of money-making opportunity, some type of co-option, and she was completely against that. So in honoring her spirit, what does that say? You know, and I think people need to really be thinking about that. Are we trying to consume her spirit, or are we being inspired by her spirit? Because I want to be inspired by Nina Simone. I want to, you know, using that energy that she had to inspire my life and inform my work, as opposed to consuming her spirit. And I think that's a decision that we have to make as a community, whether we're going to consume this product or we're going to be inspired by it. Thank you,
sis, so much, and thank you for coming to the show at the Creative Alliance. We really appreciate your support. I was talking to someone down at Center Stage about it, and, you know, the comment was, well, this is Hollywood, Hollyweird, whatever you want to call it. You know, what can you expect? What more should we expect from Hollywood? This is what they do. This is what we know they do. And I get that perspective. But like the caller just said, we have to decide what we will consume, what we will allow. And your comment just made me think of, like, if Nina was here today and she could see all of this, or if she is looking down on us today, what would she be doing? What would she be saying? I think she would be cussing and screaming and hollering, because you know Nina didn't play, so she would not have this. And I think for those of us that are here, we have to represent, if we can, her wishes.
And Akiba, I mean, talk about what you think this means, both from our political, cultural perspective, what this will mean to have this movie go on as it is, and what is at the heart of this?
I mean, I as a journalist have really tried to be careful about making assumptions based on secondhand accounts of what the script says, or, you know, sort of leaked reports. But at the same time, from what I've seen, it seems as if this is going to be a film full of sort of hazy reflections and blips and moments, told through the lens of a supposedly romantic relationship. And if what the person who wrote the piece on ninasimone.com laid out is true, that is the function of the fact that the nurse character, who is supposed to be the person who Nina's in love with, that real-life character actually sold his story to this filmmaker. And so, aside from the problem of not actually purchasing the rights to the autobiography that Nina Simone wrote, so we have the clear source material,
mm-hmm.
that's like number one in disrespect. Okay, so number two, the issue becomes, if you're telling the story through the lens of a sort of fictitious romantic relationship, then that really does open the door for you to totally depoliticize Nina Simone. it totally allows you to distort the historical record and the role that she actually played in the civil rights movement and what she meant, and also the Black Power movement and what she meant to a really radical group of people. If you can romanticize that, if you can turn that into, you know, oh, it was such a romantic time, the fashion, the galas, oh, Black Pride. Okay, that's all fine and good. But Nina Simone was not just a cultural figure. She was, to me, she was a revolutionary figure. And the idea that you can divorce her from her politics and the role that she played, meaning doing benefit concerts, meaning in her autobiography, her literally talking about wanting to actually build a gun and go out to Mississippi when she found out about you know, one civil rights murder. She talks in her book about, oh, I actually wanted to make a gun and go down there.
Right.
I doubt that that's going to make it in the movie. And that's who Nina Simone was. Whether people liked it or not, that's who she was.
And you know, and what bothers me when we do this, both in terms of our whitewashing and all the pun intended, are the heroes of America, people who have meant something, who have defined who we are, and have been part of the definition of America, that, you know, a film about Nina Simone should be Nina Simone from her childhood to where she became who she was on the stage. That
right.
She's, with all of her warts, you can play all the things she went through, from her difficulties being a mother to her difficulties with drug abuse, mm-hmm. to the power of her politics and the passion of her music, mm-hmm. that's all part of who she is.
The abusive relationship, the
right.
abusive relationships that she was in, mm-hmm. that's all part of it. Go
and
ahead.
It's the complexity of a human being. There's no problem having complexity on screen or on stage.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just like, this one story is, it's almost offensive in some ways.
It is, and you know, Mark.
Maybe not almost.
What I'm having like an issue with understanding is why so many folks are defending this movie and this issue. I've gotten on so many conversations on social media sites and blog sites with people vehemently defending this decision, and I don't get it, because to me it's about common sense. And my dad used to say, you know, no sense is common. And I'm a pretty open-minded person. People believe what they want to believe. That's fine. But this time I'm having a real hard time understanding how and why someone would defend this, because it's, to me, it's common sense. If you're making a movie right. about JFK, you cast an actor who looks similar to JFK. Down at Center Stage, we're doing a show about Edgar Allan Poe. One of the first things that they did was make sure the actor that they wanted to cast, who was also the best actor for the job, that he looked like Edgar Allan Poe or had a similar look. If you were making a movie about Dorothy Dandridge, then maybe you would hire someone who looked in the similar vein to her. It just makes sense. If you're making a biopic about someone, you know, a real historical figure, you do your best to kind of create a match for that person. And, you know, it's like, oh, well, the best actress for the job should get the job. And maybe Zoe was the best actress for the job, so she deserved it. That's not always the case. It's not always exactly the best actress for the job. You have to take a lot of things in consideration for casting.
But I think part of the tension that you're seeing really is just a manifestation of the pain that a lot of people feel about colorism, number one, about feeling falsely accused of what they deem as reverse colorism. I had somebody on my blog, you know, basically say something like, you know, I was being a reverse colorist. you know, that I'm color struck because I wrote a personal reflection about Nina Simone's features and why her features are important. And I think another strain of this has been that some people have actually, in comment sections, suggested that Zoe Saldana, because she is not of the, she's not, you know, a daughter of the American South, and that she's a daughter of the Latin American diaspora, that she can't get the real Black experience. I have seen comments like that. And really, you know, I think that those are some extremely divisive and painful and dangerous. That is a dangerous thread to me, this idea that because Zoe Saldana's ancestors were dropped off in a different part of the African diaspora, that she shouldn't be allowed to play Nina Simone. But on the flip side, I think the issue really is that we can have an erasure of who Nina Simone was and a woman of Nina Simone's features. And only somebody with Nina Simone's features would be trivialized in this way, by finding somebody who doesn't look like her. That says that her features weren't important.
Mm-hmm.
Let me want to, let's go to the phones here. That I want to leave our discussion with four women and have you read, Akiba, in a moment, the piece you wrote, the quote you took out of Nina Simone when she described four women, so we can hear that. But let's go very quickly to Mike, who's calling in. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Yes. I just wanted to get in on this because I can't remember way back when Lady Singers of Blues came out and Diana Ross didn't look anything like Billie Holiday. But, you know, she didn't even sound like her. But like you said, Hollywood, it's all about marketing. They really are not into authenticity, you know, and that's why I don't go to movies anymore. And I definitely don't go to movies where they're depicting some famous person, because a lot of times they're not going to get it right, particularly when it's a person of color, you know. And Muhammad Ali's movie, Will Smith, you know, they had him because he was marketable. He really didn't fit the mold of Ali, but you know, that's what Hollywood is. It's about money. It's about marketing, and you're not going to get the real thing.
Mike, thank you. I mean, that always plays into the roles, though. I think some of the things that that does always play into the, what we do. And I wish we would just take a minute here, Akiba. I just want to, and we're going to play a little bit of Four Women under us. As we're doing this, but play it low, folks, so people can hear what Akiba's reading. And you have a quote from her autobiography. I Put a Spell Up on You, where she explains Four Women. Would you mind reading that for us, Akiba?
Sure. She says, "I wrote a song, Four Women, which went into these feelings a little. The women in the song are black, but their skin tones range from light to dark, and their ideas of beauty and their own importance are deeply influenced by that. All the song did was to tell what entered the minds of most black women in America when they thought about themselves, their complexions, their hair, straight, kinky, natural, witch, and what other women thought of them. Black women didn't know what the hell they wanted because they were defined by things they didn't control. And until they had the confidence to define themselves, they'd be stuck in the same mess forever."
Well, we have a great deal more to talk about this, and we will, as this thing gets deeper and deeper. We'll spend a great deal more time kind of talking about Nina Simone and the history of our culture. About to say something, Roz, as we go out?
No, just thank you, Mark, for the opportunity, because I think the issue is very important, and Nina is near and dear to so many of us. So thank you for the opportunity to be here to air out, you know, a lot of this.
Thank you.
And as we go to break and then come back to talk about the youth prison controversy, we will hear Four Women, Nina Simone. I want to thank Akiba Solomon, writer for Color Lines, who wrote the piece, A Personal Take on the Nina Simone Biopics, Casting Troubles, that you will find on our website. You can just attach to it right there. And, of course, my dear friend Roz Coughlin for being here, education coordinator for Center Stage, who also is a playwright and wrote the play Nina. That was an incredible piece. And thank you both for being with us. This has been great. And I want to remind you all that coming up, speaking of Color Lines, the Facing Race Conference, organized by our friends at ColorLines.com, is the largest national multiracial gathering of leaders, educators, journalists, artists, and activists on racial justice. This year's keynote speaker is author Juno Diaz. It's happening right here in Baltimore from November 15th to 17th. We'll be there. For more information to get involved, please visit arc.org/facing race. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
My father was rich and